wonderful people that came to join us. Akua Najeri, I am just beyond honored to have you here. I really am. And the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., really. So yes. I don't want to take up any more time because what you have to say is so important. And I just want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I just want to say before we get started, thank you and all the people that you named that I can't remember all the names that helped to put this together. I really appreciate it and I'm glad to be here. Really, first and foremost, I'm glad all the people are here and those of you that stayed, because I know I'm late, those of you have come out to see and hear this. I am so appreciative of all of you, more than you'll ever know. And the team that worked to get us here, man. Thank you all. So appreciate it and glad to be here.
Right, so I was on the impression that I was gonna be introduced, but let me just make the introductions quickly. I'm Seth Rodney. I'm a senior critic and opinions editor at Hyperallergic. And, can you all hear me?
No,
okay, so I need to speak a little louder, okay. So I'm the opinions editor and senior critic at Hyperallergic. And to my left directly is Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who is integral to the Hampton House Project, which is a project that he's engaged in to preserve the original house, I believe your father was born in, and that's in Louisiana. And we'll have an opportunity for Chairman Fred Jr. to talk more about that and to talk more about his talk about his involvement in the Black Panther Cub Party. And to his left is Akua Njeri, the widow of Chairman Fred, and who's also very much involved in the Hampton House Project, and I'm sure that she'll be able to talk about that preservation project and how important that is to the legacy of Chairman Fred. So thank you all for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time and, you know, still sort of risking things being mid-pandemic. So we appreciate your presence here. And I want to just, it's a very important, I think, for us to kind of connect the dots between the activism of Chairman Fred and the art that's in this show. So the key piece there being the work that was done by Dylan on the gravestone covering. And here's a little backstory. The original gravestone for Chairman Fred has been vandalized repeatedly. It has been shot at. And one of the things that that the family sought to do to preserve Chairman Fred's legacy is engage artists to create a gravestone covering. So maybe Chairman Fred Jr., you can talk a bit about like how that project came about, how you got connected with the artist, and and how that's turned out for you, and what you feel about the efficacy of that project.
Right on. Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we're honored and humbled to be here. Thank you, Jack Shaman. Thank you, all the artists here. Matt had to leave. Jillian, everyone who I've only been on the first floor. I haven't seen the entire display, but we're impressed. We're in the stage in our life, as what Chairman Fred would say, we're too proletarian, revolutionary, intoxicated to be astronomically intimidated. What that means in plain layman's terms, it's a high of the people that we receive.
Yes.
So again, to appreciate to everyone involved with this project. Everything is political, art included. And the subject matter, this on, you wanna hear me?
Yeah.
The subject matter, in regards to Chairman Fred Hampton, Black Panther Party, it's not a quote-unquote safe subject to discuss. In fact, on the way here, I was talking to the stewardess for the We left the plane, and she was talking about the movie Judas and Black Messiah. We told about. She said, "Wow!" I said, "Have you seen it?" She said, "I couldn't watch it all the way through." And my recent trip from Africa, on my return, I got to have a discussion with the daughter, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. And she was saying, she said, there are many documentaries in regards to Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, her father. She said she really wants to do something that some of the we had did in regards to the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. In other words, like to get the, as we say with the movie, we were able to place Panther Cub political pills in the applesauce. So to get this message out, and also Minister UEP Newman said, people don't read as much as we would like for them to read, so we have to be innovative, get the conversation going. Question at hand, Chairman Fred, who grew up in Maywood, Illinois, a west suburb of Chicago, is buried in Haynesville, Louisiana. And a lot of people say, why was he buried there? A person in particular who had a great impact on his life as well as my life and so many people in our family and other people in general, L.A.U. White, Chairman Fred's grandfather, my great-grandfather. He's been buried there, and it's been an annual tradition, for lack of better terms, that law enforcement will shoot his tombstone up where he's buried at. In fact, you can Google and see actually the pictures of the bullet riddle tombstone. And years back, we were having like different internal struggles with my comrades and supporters, and some people saying we need to get a new tombstone. And in fact, I recall one discussion in particular with the niece of Bobby Hutton. Bobby Hutton was, for those who don't know, the treasurer of the Black Panther Party, 17 years old, one of the first members assassinated. In fact, Marlon Brando had spoke at his funeral.
Yes.
And her position was, she was saying, we need to get a new tombstone. And at the time, we were trying to raise funds for my legal defense as one of the trumped up cases that was issued by the state. And we got to raise funds for many other moves, but also, kind of like we refer to as the Emmett Till tactic. The world, they have to see. This is, what I'm saying? Because in this country in particular, there's a, as Malcolm X said, that America's democracy is an hypocrisy. It's a front, a facade. And just being able to talk about this, what's going on here is a revolutionary leap in the bound. So we back and forth. And so finally, years later, we've been back and forth how to deal with this here. And a lot of people said, why don't you install some cameras down there so people can see who's doing it? I said, again, I remind you, this is Haynesville, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. They're not lying. They're up front who's doing this. The people who do the shooting, law enforcement, they come down there. There's no front about it. Fast forward, we back and forth on different tactics how to address this. And so we came to middle ground. Said, okay, how we want to cover the tombstone to be acknowledged. So not a cover. In fact, I'm flashback on discussion dialogue, me, you, and the term, Tony Jillian, some other forces. Where the sleeve, openings up, you can still see the bullet punch marks in it. I don't use the term cover, but like casing open. And this is to bring attention to the fact that even after being after his assassination, this has been acknowledged even with the fight to have a street name in honor of Chairman Fred in Chicago, which everyone has a street name after in Chicago. We've seen an uproar from the city council and from the fraternal order police. Say, wow, even to this day, the legacy of Chairman Fred, how it shakes up, how it brings back the life people, as well as, the state that continues this day in position by Chairman Fred. So that's how we came to this stage in the game.
Great. And I wanted to just mention, too, that the rubbing from that casing.
Yes.
There's an image of it upstairs. Or yes. Actually, yes, I think it's upstairs. The image was taken by Jillian, I believe, Van Valkenburg. Yes.
The rubbing was taken by Matt Dillon, mm-hmm. The old Life-Right signage here in New York. He's the one that created the headstone cover during casing. I designed it. I have two pieces in the show that are the last rubbings of the headstone.
Right. Thank you. Right. Right. So
this definitely acknowledge them because this just didn't happen. All these connections are
right.
Major role.
Right. And I think, and I wanted to also discuss at some point, but I will turn the microphone over to Aikua in just a moment. But I want to just talk about that connection. One of them is a familial connection to Emmett Till's family. And Emmett Till's gravestone, in case people don't know this, is regularly desecrated in the same way. People come by and shoot it up regularly. And the family connection there is that Chairman Fred's mother, Iberia, used to babysit Emmett Till. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I just did a panel, a Zoom, with Elder Parker, who was at the home when they came, and Emmett Till was kidnapped, his cousin. And that's my paternal connection with Emmett Till. My maternal side was wild about it. My grandmother, my mother's mother, stayed on 64th and St. Lawrence, south side of Chicago. And the house, that's where Emmett Till stayed at there also. In fact, they just designated that as a historical landmark.
That's right. And he was actually visiting someone when he was kidnapped and lynched. Is that correct?
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Right. Let me ask Akua and Jerry to please address some of the history that we're kind of obliquely referring to. We know that Chairman Fred died working for organizing for the Black Panther Party. We know that he was one of the originators of the Rainbow Coalition in Chicago. Could you tell us a little bit about the work that he did, what that Rainbow Coalition sought to accomplish, did accomplish, and how that sort of connects to, or and how that is an integral part of Chairman Fred's legacy?
Yes, again, thank you for being here, everybody, and thank you. Well, first, we have to be clear on terms of use. Chairman Fred did not die. He was assassinated. And you could check Jay-Z, who was corrected by Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., when he did in the song, "I Arrived When Fred Hampton Died." So after their meeting, sometimes afterwards, Jay-Z did another song. Some of you younger people know about Jay-Z. I guess my age, we don't know about Jay-Z. Anyhow, after they had their meeting and Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. corrected Jay-Z, that's on YouTube. Jay-Z did a piece, a song, a rap in Judas and the Black Messiah. He said, "I arrived the same day Chairman Fred died," and then you hear this, "was assassinated." So let's always be clear on those terms. Secondly, Chairman Fred was not one of the people that created the Rainbow Coalition. He created the Rainbow Coalition. He had people organizing in different communities, you know, where they could talk to people. He would go out and go to these different communities and see what groups had unity. Not that they wanted to be Black Panthers, but could unite with some of the principal work, tactics, rules of the Black Panther Party. Everybody didn't want everybody out of jail. They didn't want to free political prisoners. Some people really wanted the breakfast program in their community, because you got poor white, poor Puerto Rican, poor, you know what I'm saying? Poverty was not just particular to Black people, but we all the way through history get the brunt of it, the brunt of it. So these communities were organized, not again to become part of the Black Panther Party, but to be a part of a coalition that Chairman Fred envisioned. And these groups wanted to start some things in their community similar to what the Black Panthers, again, they didn't have to endorse the whole ideology of the party, but two things. They had to agree with some principles, whether it's the end of police brutality, as we call it, which the Cubs have correctly labeled police terrorism, because that's what we live under, terror every day. And they could recognize the Black Panther Party as the vanguard. Who knows what vanguard means? Who can what's vanguard?
Leading.
leading the revolutionary struggle inside Babylon, inside the U.S. And that's very important. That don't mean they have to give up being whatever organization, Young Lords, Young Patriots, Vice Lords,
Blackstone Rangers.
I never forget that, because you know what? And I'm glad he said it, but I always include it. Because a lot of people want to make the Rainbow Coalition just joining with white people. How can you have a rainbow coalition? This black people aren't, how you going to have a rainbow coalition with just white people? But when you find people talking about it, they don't mention the Blackstone Rangers. They don't mention the disciples, the devil disciples, who through political education changed their name to the Black Disciples to identify, you know what I'm saying, with the culture that was going on at that time. Chairman Fred raised the consciousness level of these groups. Again, not that they could join the Black Panther Party, but they could take a revolutionary stance in their community against children being hungry and forced to learn in school. Police brutality, where your brother and your sister and your family get shot down. If you could, or any other principles that the party had put in place, and these established, and they were willing to establish survival programs. So I just go overboard with the Rainbow Coalition. There's so many much information, even to who created it. I bet a lot of y'all thought Reverend Jackson created it. Nobody in this room thought that. But you understand? But it was Chairman Fred Hampton, and he put the right people in place to go out to these different communities as he had went out and tested the land, if you will, to see what type of, he was an organizer supreme, just as Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. is. So you'll notice I talk a lot. So where you want to go now?
Well, I thought it was really important to talk about the specific groups. You mentioned this, and I think it's an important point to follow up, that these specific groups, the Young Lords, the Young White Patriots, the Blackstone Rangers and other Chicago gangs, were brought together on this, into this thing that Chairman Fred had conceptualized, this Rainbow Coalition, not in order to become members of the Black Panther Party. They'd retain their own identity. That was really key, I think. They retained their own identity, but they met on this ground of economic oppression being the key to every other kind of oppression. So that was a critical tenet of the Black Panther Party's understanding of what they were doing. Is that something that Chairman Fred would talk about a lot? Was that the thing that you think drove him to create this Rainbow Coalition?
What would drove him to create
that Rainbow? Idea that economic oppression was the thing that was at the root of all other kinds of oppression?
He didn't talk about economic oppression all the time, or he talked about so many things, you know what I'm saying? But the key to the Rainbow Coalition was to hit the people what they were experiencing. Like I said, a lot of people didn't think there was political prisoners or people should be let out of jail. And that was one of the 10 points. We want freedom of all Black men held in federal, state, city, county prisons and jails. You know, a lot of people say, if they did the crime, they got to do the time. You know what I'm saying? Leave them locked up. Leave them. We don't want a bunch of criminals around. A lot of people could not deal with that. So you don't have to agree with that. But who could not agree with the fact that children are going to school hungry and they have to eat to learn anything? And this was before any school had established free breakfast or free lunch program. So this was a revolution. Our children are hungry. What is the basic needs of the community? The police knocking us in our head, the pigs knocking us in the head, they shooting us. What is the basic concern of the community? And that was the motivating factor of the Rainbow Coalition to get the people to get organized themselves in their own fight for liberation and freedom.
What's hitting you in the gut? What's the worst thing that's happening? This slumlords, you know, all of these sort of things, you know. So it was never, we got to get our economics together. As a matter of fact, there's something up on YouTube where Chairman is talking to these people about building the credit union. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not going to go into all of that because y'all can see I talk a lot. But it's a whole thing of, you know, economic, putting that first. And Chairman's first thing was, what about political education? You know, and see, a lot of people take education out of context. That means go to school, get a degree, do for self before you do for anybody else. That's education, okay? Education is being able to understand your role in history and your history. And I don't mean it's some abstract where you came from kind of thing, but what is your relationship in terms of the oppressed and the oppressor? And Chairman would say, you got to say, I'm the people, I'm not the pigs. The line of demarcation has to be drawn. So that was the thing that he talked about, you know, among everything. Chairman would wake me up in the middle of the night and put on that little record player we had. Hamp, listen to this. He'll play a song and he'll throw a speech in there. You know what I'm saying? Like he talked about revolutionary happy hunting grounds, where all the revolutionaries will be, not in no, to go abstract, like you're going to go to heaven or hell, but it would be a way to bring the names up of the people that have been assassinated by the government while in this work. We're going to go, when I die, I'm going to go to Revolutionary Happy Hunting Ground. I'm going to see little Bobby Hutton. I'm going to see, you know, people who have been assassinated to keep the people to dedicate their lives to the, is sacrificing everything on this fight for freedom.
So I want to follow up too with Chairman Fred Jr. You're involved in the Black Panther Cubs, right? Could you tell me, and you call that organization the ideological offspring of the Black Panther Party. Can you tell me in what way you are, and what work are you doing to follow sort of on that agenda set by the Black Panther Party?
Right on. Well, I'm the international chairman of the Black Panther Party Cubs. And one of our mantras is we are great grandchildren of God, we offspring of Malcolm and the Cubs and Panthers. Throughout my life, you know, either directly by the government or those who simply naive to the legacy of the Black Panther Party, there have been attempts like, is the Occupy movement, is that the Black Panther Party? Is this group the Black Panther Party? So there's an ongoing attack on the legacy of the Black Panther Party, what it was. And many people tend to be liberal when we talk about the Black Panther Party. Well, in my mind, this is this. And there's a definition for the Black Panther Party. It's a revolutionary organization that had listed demands. It was very clear and was able to distinguish a revolution from a war.
Yes.
A war being two occupying armies, where you suit up and you boot up, yes, you get out and get out. A revolution where you gain the massive participation of the masses of the people. And you don't just take the opportunity to tag team some of my other comrades point out also. In many cases, with the Black community in particular, colonized communities in general, there's an attempt to force an absolute sort of, like, was it just this? Was it just the guns? People say, Black Panther Party, was it because they had guns? Not guns. Mm-hmm. Red leather jackets. The Hells Angels had leather jackets. They knew the law. The dynamics of revolution, that of the Vanguard Party, also a leadership, servants of the people. Servants of the people. In many cases, when I organize, I talk to people. I'm able to catch them when I say, well, imagine if this is your mother, your father, your husband, they can relate to that. They can't really relate to doing this for the people. Commandante Che Guevara said, no matter how preposterous it may sound, a revolutionary is guided by the most sincere sentiments of love. It was not, there was even internal struggle within the Black Panther Party. Minister Huey P. Newton said, we must even politicize the gun. What made the gun unique? What made it different from the state's gun? So the Panther Party also would say, addressing contradictions such as greedy aborigine businessmen, fascist pig cops, politicians, what is that? Fascist pig cops, mm-hmm, aborigine greedy businessmen, politicians.
Yeah, it's the term with the politicians too.
This position, it lays out the different dynamics that, in particularly hit the Black community and all oppressed communities, and different times. You're able to grab people at different points of unity, but the Vanguard has to be consistent. There was a 10-point platform, not a one-point, a 10-point platform. And a lot of people, I've been asked by reporters, how many members do you have of the Black Panther Party Cubs? I say, in many cases, it depends on how many people the police have murdered. Some people come to come to grips with certain dynamics or certain contradictions in different periods of their life. But the Panther Party was consistent, whether it be people being homeless or starvation or police. And Chairman Fritz, what's right there in front of you, you know what I'm saying, was blatant, that question of the police attacking the people. And that's a foreign language to some people, you know what I'm saying? But it's organized, it's not just, like I said, it was a revolutionary organization that served the people.
Yes.
That transcended generational, geographical, and gender lines.
Yes.
So wherever all the world, the work of the Panther Party, people say, like, one of the war stories that sticks in my mind and my heart, then Deborah Johnson, who's on the finance committee for the Black Panther Party, Lieutenant Barbara Sankey, Chairman Fred, she's talking to comedian Nipsey Russell.
Yes.
And she's talking about the donation. He kind of embellished the story. Nipsey Russell, he said, here she comes in, she's 7 months pregnant, she got these bullets, bandoliers across her chest, talking about a donation. He said, I'm not giving nobody no money for no guns,
right.
But I went to the envelope and put up on the door for the free breakfast program. And that's the dynamic of the recognizing the people.
So I wanted to talk about that because one of the things I found in doing my reading up on Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party was that at some point when you talk about serving the people, to be really clear about what that means, at some point the Black Panther Party was with their free breakfast program, were feeding thousands of children every day. In fact, it got to the point where even though the leader of the FBI at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, made noises about Black Panther Party being the most dangerous organization in the U.S., they had Senate hearings in the early 70s and found that the Black Panthers were actually feeding more children in the state of California. That at some point it was like 20,000 children a day were getting breakfast through the Black Panther Party. So it's really important for people to understand what public service looks like in those terms, in the terms set forward by the Black Panthers. And in fact, the federal government recognized that it wasn't meeting the basic needs of the people, and actually that spurred them on to create their own free breakfast program. So there was a knock-on effect. There was a way in which that revolution was started in a very grassroots way, but eventually was taken up by the federal government that recognized that they were failing us, their citizens. And so is that kind of work being continued? I'm wondering, by the Black Panther Cubs, is what kind of work are you involved in now?
Sure, Black Panther Party, let me say this also. The case, I mean, I have the utmost respect and admiration for the legacy of Black Panther Party. However, I'm going to add this too. This is an organization that seen basic needs and service. So we want to let the government off the hook by saying that, you know, this brought to life this great calculus problem that white can solve. Children going to school hungry. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to talk about what's 2 + 2. That was an intentional effort. You know what I'm saying? The study, I mean, the genius of Minister EPU, even the timing of the Black Panther Party in the breakfast. And now you have commercials. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. But the government had access to all these resources prior to this. So this is important. I want to point this out to acknowledge the war that has been waged on the Black community. You know, a lot of people just say, well, we're just not making it. No, there's there are programs put into place and not put into place that creates the type of that chaos and contradiction that we have. Yes. It was revolutionary program did. In fact, with the movie Judas and the Black Messiah, before the pandemic, I said, I didn't want to say one day.
You're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
And Black people included. If this generation is going to be able to grasp the importance of a free breakfast program, people on the cast say, what do you mean? I said, you have a generation that's going to be saying, why they didn't order Grubhub? You know what I'm saying? So you have to put stuff in context of timing when they've done it. So today, the Black Panther Party Cubs, we have the Triple C's, Children, Community, and Cubs. Where, you know what I'm saying, every Saturday, Saint-Denis, France, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Gary, Indiana, Chicago, Oakland, our programs are feeding the people. You know what I'm saying, it's distinguished from the deal is the government cannot co-opt this here. It's a different dynamic. When we went to Flint, Michigan, we gave out water. People said, well, the National Guard came and gave out water. However, include the fact where they took names of people, they came back. warrants and the immigration status, so on and so forth.
Yes.
So it's a way that we serve the people.
Yes.
We have like the community refrigerator right in front of the Hampton House, right now to this day.
Yes.
People can come and get, you know what I'm saying, nutritional food right now as we speak.
And you also do a clothing drive, right? Like you hand out coats and winter supplies for people who need them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The programs we do, the clothing drive that we're doing, also consumers to the Black Panther Party Free Breakfast Program. Mm-hmm. The people would come, they would support them, they would endorse them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the people themselves became involved with doing the program. Mm-hmm. That's one of the unique dynamics about our survival program.
Yes.
Right. If there's a way that you could sort of summarize for us, like what Chairman Fred's legacy, and this is for either of you to answer, what is his legacy precisely?
That we have the right and the ability to fight back against oppression. We talk about having freedom. And that's such a far-fetched thing because most people have not experienced this thing we call freedom. But we know the conditions that exist. We're not supposed to be living like this. We know Chairman Fred's legacy is that the people are the most important factor. But there has to be some leadership. It's just not, I feel this way today, you feel that way tomorrow. You have to have a guiding principle, rules, regulations, things that you have to adhere to. So regardless of what religion I am or not, we can work on these things. And the Vanguard's responsibility is to be in tune with the people. And that's what Chairman Fred showed. He was willing, before his assassination, a lot of people say, oh, y'all just making that stuff up. Y'all not that important. What the government want to mess with y'all for? Y'all ain't got shit. You know, that was the dialogue. And then when all this stuff about COINTELPRO come out, man, I didn't believe you when you said that, you know, this, that, and other. And the majority of the attacks on the party was aimed at from COINTELPRO, from the government, was aimed at the Black Panther Party. And that's a fact. We can't dispute it, you know. But also in that time, you had three people together. There was one of them is informant to the state, but you got to understand the majority of the COINTELPRO activity was aimed at the Black Panther Party, made the ultimate sacrifice of so many people giving their lives, so many people in exile, so many people still in prison, political prisoners that exist today, some and from the Black Panther Party. So it's important that we take that on, that we start giving support to political prisoners, prisoners of war and prisoners of consciousness alike.
And I also want to mention to folks who may not know that Akua Njeri and Chairman Fred Jr. were the cultural consultants on the film Judas and the Black Messiah. So in our conversation pre this conversation, they informed me that they were on the daily and that they consulted on every aspect of that film. And thus they feel that I think you had told me that you felt very satisfied in the way that they rendered your father's life.
Let me say this, you know, a revolutionary is never satisfied. I am.
For real.
We were able to get, it was a lot of what we call Black Panther Party Cub pills. Mm. In the applesauce. Mm-hmm. And the movie industry, like any other entity, cannot be detached from the community.
Oh, yeah.
The movie industry, like any other entity, cannot be detached from the community. A lot of people say, well, I wish they'd had this, wish we'd had that. But the reality is also, it's like gardening. The timing, location, you know, take into account the seasoning, like the famous line by Jack Nicholson's character in the movie A Few Good Men. Can't handle the truth. A lot of people, there are so many different dynamics that, you know what I'm saying, that cannot be put out through Hollywood or schools. So like people say, well, can this give out the whole story? You can't put a shark in a fish tank. There's so many different dynamics. However, we were able to be fortunate to have a dream team, from producers to cast members, time, and you name it. You know what I'm saying? It was a phenomenal movie. Those who have not seen it, I recommend. Put me on record and say, go see Judas and the Black Messiah. Look at the follow-up interviews, the dialogue, the stuff. And look at it critically and analyze it and put it in context. I mean, many people in Hollywood say it was one of the most revolutionary movies they've seen come out of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I got to commend Macro, Charles King, who also they was involved with this project also. But the cast, we always have an ongoing relationship. And they would say, like actors on the set, they would shoot their scene and they would go back, you know what I'm saying? It was a relationship we have, the communalism, that there people. I was speaking for the case, they filmed in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I wanted to speak about the case of Tamir Rice, who was murdered by the police.
You're right. I think it was a 14-year-old or 16-year-old who was shot. He was playing with his sister in the park.
Yes.
And an officer rolled out of his vehicle. And I've seen a video several times. He rolled out of his vehicle, and I think he called out to him and gave him about 2 seconds to respond, and then pulled his service weapon and murdered him. Yes.
Right. I was speaking in Ohio about the case. I look in the audience. Mm. I see these faces look familiar. I really can't see who this is. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, it's the cast from Judas and Black Messiah. Mm-hmm. This wasn't their contract. You got to go get Chairman Free having Junior speak.
Right.
But they came. There was an ongoing thirst. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you look at the stories of where we met, west side of Chicago, 3-4 in the morning. And so the ongoing commitment, you know, and we say the movie continues, the movement continues.
Right.
Daniel Kaluuya just got an NAACP Image Award 2 nights ago. So the impact is still ongoing.
Right. That's great. So I think with that, I'd like to give the audience an opportunity to just pepper us with questions. I mean, I imagine that there's several things that have come up in our conversation that people would like to get further information on. So I'd like to just open it up to the floor now for questions. So please.
I would like Akua Najeri to speak about the night that Chairman Fred was assassinated.
And before that happens, I just want to say to folks that I actually have an appointment elsewhere, so I have to run, but the floor is still open. Please ask questions, make comments. It's been my privilege to be here. Thank you for that. Thank you. I'm really encouraged and inspired by this conversation. And yes, we should not be satisfied.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
So thank you.
Great job. Yeah, appreciate that. We're not satisfied. We appreciate the moves that are being made.
So, Mama Kua, if you want to speak about that evening, how long can we speak today? Okay. All right.
Well, the night of December 3rd, 1969, we had had a political education class. I'm not used to a microphone that doesn't give feedback and beeping when it's on. So that's what I'm looking to make sure you can hear me. And I went out to a sister friend's house of mine. The chairman was going to pick me up. He didn't drive. Somebody else was going to drive because the pig stopped him every time. So anyway, we were going to go somewhere else after the class was over. The class went on almost to 12 at night. We had PE, political education, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 nights a week. It was mandatory. You had to have read the paper and whatever other reading assignments that were given to you. And how you take this and put it in regular language and break it down to the people, what's going on, and get input from them. So anyway, someone came and picked me up, brought me back to our apartment on 2337 West Monroe. Now, keep in mind, Chairman Fred had just got out on a appeal bond, ransom, he was charged with robbing the Good Humor ice cream truck with $71 worth of ice cream. And Chairman would make a joke about it. He said, they made me into a thief, but they made me into a Robin Hood kind of thief because they said I gave the ice cream to the children. And even despite the fact that someone else came forward as they had done this thing, they was not letting Chairman Fred off the hook. And that was not his first meeting with being incarcerated, arrested, and harassed. Because there's a man that was organizing at the age of 12 or 13, and where he grew the NAACP youth group from 13 to over 300 because of his ability to lead. His FBI file was started at that time. And this, even before then, when he was organized to have recreational facilities for Black children, because you couldn't go to the public park, pool or park district. Black people could not go there. That's how bad the that's how the segregation was. And Chairman Fred fought for a swimming pool, you know, so that Black children could go to it. So anyway, he had been out on a ransom from the ice cream truck robbery. So anybody's been locked up, no, you try to catch up that time, you lost. You running, you doing this, you doing. He went everywhere. He went to Canada, he went everywhere. So he was really tired after the class. And we called on the phone and told people we weren't coming. And Chairman Fred fell asleep on the phone. Now, that was not unusual for him to do that because, like I said, he was running 24/7. Well, what was interesting, if you will, was when the pigs came into our apartment and somebody was shaking Chairman, saying, Chairman, wake up, the pigs are vamping. And Chairman lifted his head up in slow motion. Chairman was a big guy, but he moved fast. He moved fast. When he go out on the street and a brother or sister come in and say, Chairman, I can't sell these 250 papers that I got to sell every week. I can't do it. Chairman, come on, brother, come on, sister. He take them down in front of Madison and Western, and Chairman be knocking on the windows of cars. Hey, brother, sister, roll the window down. I got something to talk to you about. Have you read the latest issue of the Black Panther newspaper? No, well, you know, they got a story in here about, you know, so-and-so got murdered by the police here in Chicago. That same shit going down in California. What? You know, and they say, okay, give me the paper, you know. And the people that say they couldn't, in the party say they couldn't sell a paper, they see how he would engage the people and bring them into the story, and they would get the paper. And so they would go around then feeling like, you know, I could do this. It's not that hard. It's how you do it, not your approach to people. So anyhow, the person that came into the room shaking Chairman, trying to wake him up, Chairman, wake up, the pigs are vamping. And Chairman lifted his head up real slow. It's like watching a slow motion movie. And then he laid his head down on the side real slow. At the same time, all these bullets going into our mattress, plaster flying off the wall. You could smell the cordite from all the gunshot. And Chairman Fred never moved again. By this time, I had moved on top of him. I don't know why. I just moved on top of him and covered him. And the shooting continued for what seemed like hours. And the person that come in the room said, stop shooting. We got a pregnant sister here. Like they gave a frick. He kept on shooting. Anytime you're under gunfire, 2 minutes seemed like 2 hours. Shooting continued. Then they stopped. And the person said, we coming out. So I remember looking at Chairman, who still hadn't made any movement, and sliding over and sliding into his house shoes. And thinking to myself, don't stumble, don't fall, they will kill you and your baby. Focus on walking, and when you get out, remember every face you see. They got a glasses or, you know, they got a badge. Remember the badge. This conversation I'm having in my head. Of course, I don't remember none of that. And when I was coming out the room with my hands up, had Chairman Fred's robe on. Some of you have seen it. That's what I had on. when I was arrested. Chairman Fred's robe, his house shoes, and his long johns. The pigs were lined up in two lines at our doorway. They grabbed my robe and they started laughing. They said, "What do you know? We got a broad here." Grabbed me by the hair, slung me into the kitchen area. I'm trying to remember badges, faces, and all of that. And I was so concentrated on not falling or stumbling because I knew they would shoot me and say I went for a gun. Well, there was no gun there. So they threw me into the kitchen area and they began to throw Doc Satchel and other people who had been shot on the floor into the kitchen. The pigs was arguing about whose prison, who we belonged to. Was it the Chicago pigs, the state's attorney pigs, or, you know, where we going to take these people, you know, for them to be incarcerated? Finally, they decided that they were going to take us to, I don't even remember the precinct that they took us to, but I asked them, could I get a safety pin? Because my robe was still on. This is December 4th in Chicago. And if you ain't been there, I know you heard about the weather. Since Chicago was freezing cold. And I remember being handcuffed behind my back. And while they were arguing, the pigs was arguing about how we were going to go out, who's going to get us. They took us out of the front, to the front door. Now, I knew that I could not look towards our bedroom because I didn't know how I would respond. Because while in the kitchen area, a voice that was unfamiliar, that was not an occupant of the apartment, said, "He's barely alive. He'll barely make it." Then the shooting started again. And when it stopped, again, another voice unfamiliar to me said, "He's good and dead now." And I knew they was talking about Chairman Fred, but I did not want to look that way because I didn't know how I would respond. Going out to the front door, through the front door, Defense Captain Mark Clark from Peoria was laying on the floor. He had been assassinated, laying in a pool of blood. Then they took us to the pig station. They charged us with aggravated assault, attempted murder, aggravated battery against the pig, but only possibly two shots, they later stated, could have come from the Panthers. And that was when Defense Captain Mark Clark was shot in the heart, and when they busted in, and he fell to the floor, and his gun went off up through the ceiling to the second floor. The other shots that Edward V. Hanrahan, then state's attorney, got on TV and did a reenactment, showed the bathroom where the vicious attack by the Black Panthers only shows the bravery of the Chicago police and how they survived this attack. The bullet holes that were supposed to come from the Panthers were nail heads to the bathroom. Also, the back door where they had said Chairman Fred stood up in the window and quietly pumped a 45. Those were nail heads holding the lock in place on the to the back door. So we were all given these charges. That was supposed to put a period on the end of this thing called fighting for freedom, but it did. It didn't. A lot of people ran and hid. A lot of people left the country. A lot of people were in prison. But as I said before, although we don't know what this thing called freedom is, we continue to fight for it. And I want to go on the record again as saying the only organization, I don't care what you create, what you donate to, your church, your school, or pop up an organization yourself. The only organization that's carrying on and defending the legacy of the Black Panther Party is the Black Panther Party Cubs. And I'm honored, privileged to serve on the advisory board of that organization. Power to the people, free them all.
Free them all.
Right on.
Thank you for that, Mother Comrade. Does anyone else have any questions for Chairman or Mother Comrade?
Is there any kind of ongoing organized effort to get prisoners who were Black Panther released?
Yes, that's a major aspect of our work with the Black Panther Party Cubs. We do coalition work with so many others. In fact, that was something else that we look at the conclusion of the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. there was a battle, like even like the terms that could be put up. I think it did say free all. It was like a battle. I recall that battle yet, but to make sure that was inclusive about those who are still held captive. One in particular, one brother who has just been released, Jerry Odinga Dunnigan, who was directly impacted by the work of William O'Neill, agent provocateur William O'Neill, who's been, Jerry Odinga Dunnigan was locked up for 45 years. Yeah. He's just been released. And there are so many others who we're still fighting for. Cases of Mumia Abu Jamal, Sunday Ade Coley, Imam Jamal Amin, formerly known as H.R. Brown, countless of others. We in the process of now getting our website, the Black Panther Party Club website, put together. We which definitely have that's a major aspect of our work. So listing and status check of political prisoners. We also have a campaign titled One Prisoner, One Contact. That means basically at any given point, everyone should be able to give us a status check on some particular prisoner, where they at, if they're in isolation, so on and so forth. So that's the One Prisoner, One Contact campaign. Some of my past work can be on my blog spot, chairmanfredjr.com. It's not been updated, but it's still some of my past work in regards to political prisoners. And not just some of the names that people know, the C numbers in Illinois. C numbers are those who were locked up under the old law before 1978, under indeterminate sentences, because there's so many cases of people, you know, you look and say, wow, I just don't, even how we view political prisoners in a cliche is quote unquote politically correct sort of way.
What does that mean?
Political indeterminate sentencing. Before, prior to 1978, prisoners were served, like you have what you call a, like a B, there's a prefix before all the prison numbers, B or K. And you, in Illinois, particularly, if a person says that their prison number is K dash, you pretty much can tell the timeline they were locked up. Before 1978, you had the C numbers. And the C numbers were locked up before 1978. They were indeterminate, where you would get a sentencing ranging from 30 to 400 years. You know, so there's no set determined time that you were given. And that's the C numbers. So many of them are still dying, languishing inside Illinois prisons in particular, but our campaign for the freedom of all political prisoners is international. In fact, one of our main cause is free them all. And in fact, someone close, Jaleel Moon King just was released recently up here, Sekou Odinga. So, but this, as I said earlier, revolutionary is never satisfied. We got some back out, but again, the campaign is ongoing. Mumia Abu Jamal, Sunday Adekola, and so many others.
We have time for one more question. Any other questions?
I'm going to take this. This is a little bit more. Okay. So, the very question is, how far did the FBI get that past conversation and the colleagues and people with information that the FBI is handling? Do you have any clue on what the Oscar is in the media or the Supreme Court finance or something?
Representative of a person for Black Lives Matter will probably be asked, better to answer that question. You know, because again, I chair the Black Panther Party Club, and that the deal is like even if it's not like it's important. My mother comrade pointed out earlier about the COINTELPRO over 90% of the COINTELPRO was directed to the Black Panther Party. COINTELPRO acting as a counterintelligence program. I think it's important the purpose with that, who we're talking about, what organization. Similar to like we talk about like the Free Breakfast Program. This is not to dismiss or negate that the counterinsurgency impacts every aspect of our lives one way or another. But to put, I think again, there'll be better answers for some of us in the Black Lives Matter.
Thank you.
No problem, thank you.
Okay, so I guess we have to wrap it up then. What I do want to say is thank you very much, Chairman Fred and Mother Comrade, for coming all the way out here from Chicago. Thank you for letting me continue to work with you in any capacity I can. It's been an honor. And also, as you're making your way through the gallery, there is an area where there's three or four nonprofit organizations that are all working for similar causes. One of them is the Hampton House. So if you scan the QR code with your phone, you can donate to the organization. The funds go directly to us and what we're doing every day in the organization. So, all right.
Again, thank you all for having us. We appreciate this. We're honored and humbled to be here. Again, we reiterate, go to SaveTheHamptonHouse.org. See what we're doing at Hampton House. Also, we have this March 11th. We have a hearing in Maywood, Illinois for the historical landmark status. That's not for national, but it's for Maywood, for that to be acknowledged. And this is going to be this groundbreaking move. Like, even unbeknownst to me, there are no people of color that even have a historical landmark in that era, Maywood. So every campaign we take on, we do it in an objective way, not just some sort of, this is my daddy's house, but really to heighten the contradictions that people say, damn, this is a blatant contradiction that in itself. So again, that's March 11th. People still sign a petition on SaveTheHamptonHouse.org, and of course, however you can, donate. The QR code is over there on the walls. Please, all the supporters, appreciate it.
Thank you.